Here in February, Governor Dugard of South Dakota vetoed a bill that would have been similar to HB2, though narrower in scope, saying, you know, we don't need to do this. This is a, you know, solution in search of a problem. And I think over the last several months, we've seen things go very extreme in the wrong direction, but there are still lawmakers who are reasonable.
Earlier this month, Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced the Justice Department had filed a complaint against the state of North Carolina over HB2.
Let me also speak directly to the transgender community itself. Some of you have lived freely for decades, and others of you are still wondering how you can possibly live the lives that you were born to live, to lead. But no matter how isolated, no matter how afraid, and no matter how alone you may feel today, know this, that the Department of Justice, and indeed the entire Obama administration, want you to know that we see you, we stand with you, and we will do everything we can to protect you going forward. And please know that history is on your side. This country was founded on the promise of equal rights for all, and we have always managed to move closer to that ideal, little by little, day by day. And it may not be easy, but we will get there together.
That's Attorney General Loretta Lynch. It's been called the Martin Luther King moment of the transgender community. Chase Strangio, the significance of what she said. And also, is funding tied to the—you say it's not a directive, it's guidance to the states.
Yeah, so first, with respect to Attorney General Lynch, those remarks, they were very powerful. You know, she brought in the force of the federal government. She affirmed the trans community who has been under attack. But she's also, you know, running a Department of Justice that is incarcerating Chelsea Manning, fighting her access to health care. You know, the Obama administration is responsible for the deportation of so many in the trans community. So as we value and praise that, it's also important to remember all of the other policies that have an impact on the LGBT community.
And will funding be tied to the guidance?
You know, violations of Title IX do risk funding to schools. And so hopefully, as states continue to dig in, we'll see the administration take action.
Chase Strangio, staff attorney with the ACLU, we thank you for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Special thanks to Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottes, Dina Geister, Amy Littlefield. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is Zarna of Women of Color Speak Out, a collective of four climate justice, racial justice, gender justice, and intersectional movement activists that came together in 2015 in Seattle during the Shell No campaign.
Our nation's over-reliance on incarceration has left millions of children emotionally cut off from the most important relationship of their young lives. Join Prison Pipeline on May 30th to hear Laura Speer from the Annie E. Casey Foundation discuss how children of prisoners are impacted and how the states and communities can help support these kids and improve their prospects for success. That's Prison Pipeline, May 30th, at 6:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the 29th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 1st through 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park in Portland. This year, performers include Tedeschi Trucks Band, Dr. John and the Night Trippers, Maceo Parker, a Prince tribute with Liv Warfield and the Special Horns, and many, many more, plus two after-hours parties, dance competitions, six cruises, and 4th of July fireworks. This year, everyone will need a pass to enter the festival. Single-day passes go on sale June 1st, and early bird pricing has been extended to June 5th at 11:59 p.m. Again, that's the Waterfront Blues Festival, July 1st through 4th at the Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2016.
I got my headphones on, just on the block. Not a moment to waste, cause I feel the bass drop.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. It is my pleasure to have on the program this morning Zarna Joshi with with Women of Color Speak Out. They will be here in Portland this afternoon, this evening, I should say, at the First Unitarian Church, starting at 6:30 p.m. First Unitarian Church is at 1121 Southwest Main Street in Portland. And the topic this evening is Women of Color Speak Out, Climate Change and the Systems of Oppression. And before I bring my fabulous guest on, let me give you a little bit of background about her. Zana Joshi has been an activist since she was a teenager. She's campaigned for workers' rights, fair trade, climate justice, student rights, women's rights, and racial justice. She works in solidarity with indigenous movements and is passionate about decolonizing our communities and minds. She's an Indian daughter and believes that her spiritual and ancestral heritage of fighting oppression is what drives her in this movement. She's an author, public speaker, world traveler, and leads a yoga group in Seattle. Please welcome to the program, Zana.
Hi, Joanne. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. I know you're going to be driving down I-5 a little later today to join us this evening. Tell me, and so hopefully it'll be a pleasant drive. I've made that I-5 drive, and some
many
days,
times,
yes, some days is better than others. And
that's
so I want to first thank you and your team for coming to Portland this evening. And how did you start getting involved in a climate change dialogue and conversation?
It's difficult to answer that because I can't remember when. I've always been involved with defending the earth in some sense. My family is Hindu. I was raised vegetarian. I was raised in the values of whatever we do affects everything around us.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we don't want to eat in a way that harms others. We don't want to cut down trees. We don't want to poison the earth. We want to make sure that we're not wasting water. Every drop is precious and sacred. Every grain of rice is precious and sacred. You don't throw away food. These were the ways in which I was raised, because to do anything else is to harm the earth. And so that was the way I was raised. And then, I went to school in England.
Okay.
And we were taught in elementary school, and this is like during the 1980s, that, climate change is a theory. Many people are saying it's a theory, but we should probably act as if it's true. And so because of that, it was like, well, if this is the case, we need to do something really soon. Mm-hmm. And so growing up with that, as a teenager, I got involved. I was looking at different ways that people were talking about reducing consumption, recycling. These were just things that were just there anyway.
Right.
And then when I was a student in college, it was just, a very obvious thing to join People and Planet Society, which was one of the groups in my college that was engaged in working on climate action, fair trade, especially since they're all connected and they're all linked. We're talking about capitalism, which is a root cause of climate change. We're talking about colonialism and racism, which is a root cause of climate change. And so these were things that were, in so many ways, just a part of my consciousness, just in the things that I was taught and how I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
And as I became old enough to actually take action on my own, it was a simple thing to do them. It was a simple thing to take action. And that needs to be how it is for everyone.
Well, I find it interesting that you are four women of color, all with a very diverse background, that came together to create Women of Color Speak Out. Now, and your collective is really focused on direct action activism, right? And so tell me how you came to that conclusion, that was how you would form and work together.
So we actually all came together during the Shell No movement last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all in the Shell No movement in different ways, in various different ways. People like myself and Sarah Tokola, we had been direct action activists for many years up to that point. Yin Yu, who is also one of our collective, she had been in the climate movement, but she was coming from a very different perspective, you know, removing invasive species and mm-hmm. recycling and, you know, composting. Like, that's where she was coming from. She wasn't coming from a direct action perspective.
Right.
But when Shell's rig came into town, she felt very strongly that she had to do something immediately. She had to respond to this, and she joined the Shell No movement. Our friend Sol Pariwala was actually very new to this movement. And it was during Shell No, it was on Earth Day that she came to an Earth Day event that I was speaking at. And I was talking about Shell No, and I was talking about how this is a moment in time, it's a moment in history where we must respond to this critical problem. And she was wanting to get involved with the climate movement anyway, and not knowing how. And she joined Rising Tide Seattle, which is what I was part of at that time. And from there, the four of us started to have conversations together about women of color in this movement and how, you know, we're looking around within Seattle and we're seeing a very white climate movement.
Yeah, we're seeing that in Oregon, too.
It's overwhelmingly white.
Yes.
And we were like, well, how does this make any sense? Because it's our people in the global south who are actually suffering.
Right.
So where are our people? And so we started to have conversations about how, you know, and why this was the case. And, you know, talking about the racism within the movement, talking about the fact that it's not a safe space for people of color,
right.
Talking about the white privilege that is inherent within the system. You know, I mean, we have, you know, major groups that are talking about 2 degrees of warming. We need to cap global warming at 2 degrees, and that's a safe point. But that's not true, because 2 degrees is only when Europe starts to burn. 2 degrees is only when the global north and the global white people start to burn. But at 2 degrees, the soil in Africa is infertile. It is genocide to people of color in the global south and indigenous peoples and species all over the world. So this is unacceptable. And this may well could be a reason why people of color look at the climate movement and think this is racism. This is marginalizing and colonizing our very people who are suffering from the root causes of climate change that are capitalism, colonialism, racism, and patriarchy. And so we started to have these conversations. We were all noticing within our own ways. And we started talking about how we needed to create our own space.
Yes.
Within the movement. It's not a matter of waiting for someone to give you your space. It's not a matter of waiting for anyone to, you know, let you do this. You have to take your space. You, because that's what's important. In a in any movement, the voices of the most marginalized,
yes,
must be lifted up. And so we were talking about lifting up our own people's voices and doing it by helping each other to step into this space so that we could really start to talk about those things.
If you're just joining us, I am speaking with Zana Joshi. She will be here with her other colleagues, her other three colleagues, this evening for Women of Color Speak Out, and that will take place at the First Unitarian Church starting at 6:30 p.m. The title of the talk, Women of Color Speak Out, Climate Change and Systems of Oppression. Zana, I have to say, as you were talking, what you're talking about, your experience in Seattle, is a mirror image of the experience that we have here in Oregon. No surprise to you, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so Have you been able to take that space in Seattle as it relates to being leaders in the climate change movement? Is your group now seen as leaders in the climate change movement?
So what's been extraordinary is the very success of the work that we're doing over the last year. I mean, it's been literally a year since we came together and began to, talk about doing this.
Right.
And we weren't sure what it was going to look like, but we started to have conversations just a year ago. And we decided to do a town hall event where, the four of us would go to town hall and we would have a conversation where we were talking about our personal stories.
Right.
And we didn't even send out a press release, and the press showed up. The stranger showed up and was live tweeting it. You know, we had, premier photographers who showed up and were taking pictures and blasted these pictures everywhere. We had, people who just came and blogged about what they were seeing. Mm-hmm. And what so many people were saying was there were four women of color on stage talking about climate change, talking about their personal stories, and there was not one white man in sight. That never happened, and that's revolutionary.
That is.
And what we were saying is it's revolutionary in Seattle, but this is, in fact, the truth around the rest of the world.
Yes.
This is what's going on. And so since then, since that time, it really has been unprecedented. We've been invited to so many different places. We've been to prisons, we've been to colleges, we've been to community centers, we've spoken with demographics across the board. So what we've seen is that when we decided to take our space and when we stepped up and we said we're going to do this, what happened was that it resonated deeply because everyone already knew that there is a deep gulf within our movement that is lacking the voices of the most marginalized. And we need those voices and we need to hear from them and we want to hear from them and we want to learn from them. And we have had pushback. Mm. We have absolutely had pushback where we've had people saying your usual things, your usual white fragility, male fragility responses of, oh, why do you have to make everything about race?
Well, yes.
You know, your usual nonsense comment, which shows a very lack of understanding about the real causes of climate change and the real causes of so much suffering around the world.
Yes.
And so we've had that pushback. But what we've also seen a great deal is a lot of support coming from not the mainstream environmental movement, but the grassroots. The grassroots groups have created so much support. And, when we said that we were coming to Portland, that was also what was extraordinary, was it was the grassroots groups who actually reached out to us and said, what can we do to help?
Yes.
And it was grassroots people who said, we would love to help you. How can we help you? Which is what has made putting this together from Seattle so much of a pleasure, because we're like, wow, we have so many friends in Portland. We didn't realize we had this many friends. It's fabulous.
And so what I am just thrilled about, and I want you to give me a little insight. Your collective of four activists, all women of color, are now speaking in schools and prisons, community-based organizations, faith organizations. Are you seeing the audience reflect a more diverse population?
That is something that we have noticed from the very beginning. Mm. When we did our town hall event, we had a lot of our white friends show up, but we had a lot of people of color that we'd never even seen show up.
Mm-hmm.
We have also done events in... we did an event at the Ethiopian Community Center in Rainier Beach. We did an event at Garfield High School where we had 500 students show up.
Wow.
And half of the crowd were students of color. And then the very next week, those students held a forum where they basically came together to kind of debrief right. on what was happening. And there were over 50 students in that room, and most of them were students of color.
Fabulous. Wow.
It was incredible. And now those very students have come together and they have formed a Youth of Color Speak Out. And they will be joining us when we do our event in Seattle on June 10th at the Duwamish Longhouse. And they will be joining us there. And they're going to take some of the time to talk about some things that they want to talk about. And so that's what's happening. And this is what we were talking about when we first came together, was we don't want to become this giant group that's just women of color speak out everywhere and hundreds of people and thousands of people. We want to stay local mm-hmm. and we want to stay small. But what we want is we want lots of groups. Mm-hmm. We want youth of color speaking out. We want elders of color speaking out. We want men of color speaking out. We want different people in different backgrounds coming together to actually speak locally about what is going on for them and speak from the heart right. and speak from those personal experiences and get involved and get their own people involved. And that is what we are beginning to see. And it's been a year of doing this now, but a lot of what we're seeing has been reflecting those very same conversations that we were having. And it's been such a beautiful, inspiring thing to see.
So, Zana, I have a question. As I review most of the material coming out of the climate change movement, mm-hmm, it mm-hmm. is not reflective of my lived experience as a person of color. And mm-hmm. so the disconnect is so profound between mm-hmm. what we get inundated with from mm-hmm. the traditional environmental groups, which mm-hmm. you know, which makes me understand why people of color just kind of glaze over when mm-hmm. they hear the information, because it comes mm-hmm. from primarily a scientific, philosophical mm-hmm. place as mm-hmm. compared to lived experience.
Right.
And so
right.
So it sounds like you have at least started the process, at least in your community, of creating a space where people of color can talk about their lived experience and how that mm-hmm. relates to climate change.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. You know, as you say, when the narrative is dominated by white male voices mm-hmm. that will always talk about the science,
yes,
but not actually apply that science to actual life
right.
and to actual experience, but they'll talk about the carbon.
Yes.
Yeah, but what put the carbon there?
Right, right.
You know? Why was the carbon taken out of the ground to begin with? and that disconnect, because you see, that is reflective of white privilege.
Yes.
Because when you have white privilege, you never actually have had to actually confront the suffering that is the reality of taking that carbon out of the ground. But if you are a person of color, it is very likely that you and your own have suffered from these very problems that have come from taking that carbon out of the ground and burning it and using it in various other ways, because it's not just fossil fuel burning that is causing climate change. It is massive, destructive animal agriculture that is actually the leading cause of climate change. The mainstream climate movement will never talk about that.
I was just going to say the same thing. That is not even part of the conversation ever.
Not even part of the conversation. No. And what we have been doing within Women of Color Speak Out is we have refused to be quiet about that. Wow. We are not being quiet about that, because also what so many people say, and the excuse that the mainstream movement uses is, we can't talk about food because people won't listen to us. Utter nonsense.
Totally.
Within, first of all, numbers that have just come out of the UK is that over the last 5-10 years or so, since grassroots people have been talking about food have been talking about meat eating as a serious problem to the climate, as a serious problem to human rights, as a serious problem to, you know, to just justice in general, because it's so horrific, it's so cruel, it's so violent. And because they've been talking about it, veganism is up by 350%.
Wow.
Okay. 300. Why? Because ordinary people start talking about it. The mainstream wouldn't. So grassroots people did. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens when you actually get the truth into the hands of the public, is because the public respond, because the public wants to know the truth. And if you don't tell them the truth, how can they do anything about it?
Yes.
And what we've seen in the U.S. over the last 5 years is that veganism has actually gone from vegans and vegetarians being just 1% of the population,
right,
to being 5% of the population.
Wow.
In the last 5 years, since, you know, grassroots people have made movies about it, they've made documentaries, they've gone out there and they've done videos, they have done, you know, campaigns to you know, get people to try a vegan diet. They've talked about the climate. Because this information is getting out there, the people are responding. And that's what happens when you tell people the truth. But if
yes,
you come from this extremely privileged perspective of, no, but we don't want to inconvenience people.
Right.
That is that narrative. It
yes,
is, you know, that's that narrative of, oh, we don't want to inconvenience people, except that my people are dying
yes,
in giant heat waves, where the food is not growing, the crops are not growing, there is no water. That's inconvenience. That's suffering. You're not having your hamburger is not inconvenience. It is a simple thing you can do as one step in many, many different steps to actually deal with the injustices of this world. And climate injustice is reflective of those root causes that are massive consumption and capitalism, the colonial domination, where, well, you know, as rich white people, we can just go into countries where people of color live and take what's theirs.
Yes.
That's what's happening. That's the root cause of all of that carbon coming out of the
well,
ground.
And it's actually even worse than that, because not only do we go into countries and take what we want, we actually give those multinational corporations tax benefits for
mm-hmm,
them to go take resources
mm-hmm,
from other countries. So
mm-hmm,
it's even worse than just they take it. We pay them to
mm-hmm,
take it.
Mm-hmm. And that is capitalism.
That is capitalism.
Right? That is the fact that our system is run by these corporations that have no conscience, that are not people, that don't care about justice. And even if they did care about justice, they still come from a white privileged perspective
yes,
that is exploitative of people of color, of women of color, because it is always women of color who suffer the most. Always.
Absolutely. If you're just joining the conversation, I'm talking to Zana Joshi. She is part of Women of Color Speak Out, and they will be here from Seattle at the First Unitarian Church this evening, starting at 6:30 p.m. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. I figured I have to share you, Zana, because I'm so intrigued by our conversation. But this is a talk radio show, so I do want to encourage the audience to call in with any questions that they might have. And
mm-hmm,
so one of the things that occurs to me is I love that you talk about the prison industrial complex
mm-hmm,
as part of what's leading to climate change in our society.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I mean, as I think about capitalism, colonialism, racism, you know, all those definitely flow very specifically. And then when I get to the prison industrial complex, I'm like, ah, somebody really thoughtfully about adding
mm-hmm,
that to your agenda. And so
mm-hmm,
why was that added?
So it was Sarah Tocola who actually brought that topic and put that in. And the reason why is because, you know, prison, particularly within this country, is modern-day slavery.
Yes.
They have no voice. They are completely marginalized within our society. They are forced to do work because we're all told that, oh no, slavery is illegal, except if you are a prisoner of a crime.
That's right.
Okay? And so therefore, we have this massive drug war that was introduced specifically to increase numbers in prisons so that they would have free labor or very, very cheap labor. And so when we're talking about capitalism, the fact that we have corporations that make everything they sell in prisons using the slave labor of our marginalized people who have been taken to prison, and usually it is people of color, it is usually black people, it is Hispanic people, it is indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the single largest growing demographic within prisons is women, and
yes,
in particular black women.
Yes.
And so what we're seeing is these are the root causes of climate change, and we're seeing it reflected within the prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one reason. The other reason is that when we're talking about climate change, who's going out to fight these forest fires, and who's going out to fight these oil spills, and who's going out to actually shovel all of the snow during these giant snowstorms? They're sending prisoners.
Yes.
They're sending those people who are not given adequate training, who are not given the safety gear that is required. They're being sent out to fight forest fires, and they've not been trained,
yes,
correctly in how to fight forest fires, and they don't have the safety gear. And these are, you know, not just prisoners. Many of them are extremely young. Remember, our prison industrial complex targets young black men.
Yes.
You know, we're talking about teenagers who are being sent out to fight the disasters that they have not caused. They are not responsible for. It is the corporations that are responsible for this, but they're being sent out to fight this mess, and they're being sent out alone with no help, and they're not getting paid for it on top of all of that,
right,
as if it's not bad enough.
Right,
so,
right.
So these are there are many different ways in which this actually feeds in to the system that has caused climate change, and it must be taken down for multiple reasons. And so, you know, Sarah will talk much more on all of those links later today.
Yes.
When we do our presentation, she has a fabulous thing where she goes deep within, you know, each and every single one of these issues. Well, not every single one of these issues, because it's impossible to even know. We're still learning.
Right.
You know, we're still shocked by the things that we hear. When we spoke at the women's prison in Gig Harbor, and we said, well, what do you do in your prison when there's a natural disaster that happens here? And they said, well, you know, the prison locks down, all of the guards leave, and we're left here to die. Yeah.
Whoa.
And we were stunned when we heard that.
Wow.
We heard from them where they said, before I came here, I was vegetarian, but it's impossible to be vegetarian now because the food is so bad. And ever since the prison was bought up by the private prison company, it's been even worse. It's been even harder. And if we say anything about it, we get put in solitary confinement.
Wow.
Yeah.
We have a caller on the line, so we're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Good morning, Zama. I really want to thank you for speaking out the way you are, and you are so forceful and so clear, and I say go. Speak on it, sister. Thank you. Thank you. There's so many things, so many issues you brought up that And just speaking to what you were just talking about, the prison industrial complex and how prisoners end up cleaning the, you know, mess of the industrial complex, you know, it's also true of indigenous populations. You know, in the Arctic, the giant spills up in the Arctic, they end up, you know, hiring indigenous people to do those sorts of, you know, toxic janitorial, ecological things at disasters as well.
Right.
So, but everything you're saying is true. Here's my question. You know, I'm a white guy. I'm an old white guy. You know, and I am with Portland Rising Tide, and I've had a long commitment to social justice. You know, I've worked in schools with kids of color, and programs for high risk youth, and I really believe in education. But I hear you say somewhere in the beginning that you were at a rally or you were speaking, and there wasn't a white guy in sight, and it felt like a personal victory. And I really appreciate that. But on the other hand, it makes me feel like, well, should I be coming to your thing tonight? I mean, are white guys welcome? And in one sense, we need to form alliances.
Wow.
And I come from not a terribly privileged background, but just by the nature of the color of my skin, and the mm-hmm. fact that I'm a male. I am privileged, mm-hmm. period. Is there a point in me coming tonight? Is this mm-hmm. for white guys?
Mm-hmm. So just to clarify, when I said that there wasn't a white guy in sight, I was talking about on stage.
Mm-hmm. With the microphone. With the microphone.
Oh, okay.
Speaking to the public. So
right.
You are absolutely welcome. We absolutely want you there. Mm-hmm. What the work is that Women of Color Speak Out is doing is twofold. One is that we are reaching out to our own community. And the other is that we are reaching out to the white community and to the mainstream climate movement to actually get them to shift their analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And to help them get to a point where when our people come into the movement, it is a safer space for them.
Yes.
So Mike, you absolutely need to be there because it sounds as if some of what we're talking about and that you want to help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing because we need people like you there to help educate the other white men. It's not a person of color's job and it's not a woman of color's job to be educating all of the white men.
That's
the
right.
truth is it should be white men educating the other white men.
Absolutely.
And so that's why we need you there, Mike. And that's why we are doing this work, mm-hmm. because what we're doing is to actually ensure that we can work together in a way that doesn't perpetuate the traumas
right.
that have been created by the root causes, right? We
right.
don't want to perpetuate patriarchy. We don't want to perpetuate white supremacy. And and therefore that means that the white people who are already in this movement need to do some serious training,
mm-hmm.
and they need to do some serious decolonizing of their minds,
yes.
to understand the things that you're talking about, and that just inherently by the color of their skin and by their gender and by their cis body and by their being straight and by all of those things, they have privilege that other people simply don't and have never had. And so it is very important that you are there and that we have people like you. One of the things that we talk about within Women of Color Speak Out and that we go out and we say is that, what we need really actually is 3.5% of the population
mm-hmm.
to be continuously rising up, to be continuously shutting down the system, to be continuously demonstrating in the streets, continuously talking about it. 3.5%. That means we don't need the other side who will not respond to logic and facts. What we need is our people on this side.
That's right.
To actually stop being racist.
Yes.
And to actually stop being sexist and to actually stop oppressing the people within their movement so that we can grow the movement and to change the narrative from that dominant white male colonialist narrative to the narrative of marginalized peoples,
yes,
including indigenous peoples. And that is absolutely central to what we're saying. It is indigenous peoples and it is people of color all over this world, particularly in the global south, who suffer the most. And when Shell was planning to go up to the Arctic, the reason why I, locked down in front of T5 and I put myself in a kayak and I got arrested by the Coast Guard was because Shell, which is a British and Dutch company, it's a white corporation, was going up to the Arctic where brown people live to colonize them too. And I wasn't going to let it happen because my own people suffered from that very same type of colonization.
Right.
And so it is essential that we stand in solidarity with indigenous peoples because if we're not doing that, we're not confronting the root causes of climate change.
Absolutely true. We've got several callers lined up. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Steve. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, very good. You know, we're talking about solidarity here, and a while back I heard an interesting testimony from a singer who was talking about Earth Firsters standing with a black community in what was called Cancer Alley down south. It was some parish in Louisiana, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about actually attending the churches. Yeah, she said, well, here's all these anarchists, Earth Firsters, attending the black church because that's where the black people were. That was the center of their community.
Right.
And eventually she actually joined the black church. But the point was that was interesting to me was...
Did we lose you? He was just getting to the point. Oh, my goodness. Oh, hopefully he'll call back. We have another caller. Good morning, Tim. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello. Hi. Thank you. Great work, Joanne. I agree with almost like 100% of what you guys are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There was one thing that kind of worried me, and that was when you were talking about, you know, who should the white guy talk to, right?
Right.
I should say, I guess I'm mostly white. And you guys responded, it should be another white guy, right?
Right.
I did a lot of work with different peoples and stuff, and I can understand why you might want to have a person of similar characteristics to talk to another new person coming in. But I really believe it needs to be both white and people of color talking to these new white dudes coming in. And I think that's important because you want to build bonds of trust and friendship. And if we're going to get over all this racist shit, we got to like each other. We got to be friends. We can't do that if it's just people like ourselves who do the talking, the introducing. We got to establish those bonds.
Well, I think that I don't think that you're wrong. I think that there's a couple of steps that happen, though. I think that white men can't just assume that the narrative and position they've taken around climate change is the only narrative and position that's possible. I think in order for white men to actually be part of a multiracial movement, they actually have to be able to absorb where they are. They have to be able to absorb opinions and mindsets that are different than their own. I think it's challenging.
Isn't that true of all of us?
Well, wait. Let me. Well, it's the difference when you're in a position of power, right? When you come in with your position of power, right, just based on who you are, it is better to take a back seat if you are trying to learn something different, right? Now, I believe that we need and must have multiracial, multicultural, multigenerational movements.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely believe that some work has to happen between people that are similar, that have the same economic background, that have the same racial identity. Because guess what? You can't work out your racial stuff in a room with people of color. Right. If you haven't worked that stuff out before you walk in a room, then you come in the room at a disadvantage.
And, you know, this thank you. Thank you, Joanne. I absolutely 100% agree with everything that you just said. And one thing, Tim, that's very important to understand is everything that Joanne is saying. If you yourself have not worked on these issues before you walk into this room, and if you have not worked on it with other people who are like you, you will not be able to respond to the people in that room in a way that doesn't hurt them.
Yes.
You may very well begin to perpetuate those very same things. And you'll do it by saying, but not all white men are like this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly what men and white people say in order to defend themselves. And what they speak and what they don't realize is that they're speaking from a position of privilege and power where their very existence means that they get more than everyone else.
They have more say than everyone else. They are able to exploit others and not even know that they're exploiting them, because the system is designed to ensure that they get as much as possible before anyone else gets anything. So, you know, one thing that I'll point out is that as Joanne was speaking there, you interrupted her. You interrupted her to literally say that very thing.
Right.
Now, as a white man interrupting a woman of color, it was very easy for you to do so. That's perpetuating these very same traumas that have created this issue. So it's not about all of us being bad. It's not about any one of us individually being bad. It's about all of us realizing and doing the work to realize and to understand that the system itself is designed to ensure that some people are kept down and other people are kept up. It's very important that you understand that, because if you don't understand that, we cannot help each other and have those conversations that you are saying we need to have.
Mm-hmm.
How can we do that if my own people, women of color, were to walk into a room and every time they say something, they get interrupted by a white man? Is that a safe space for them? No, it's not, because they are continually being shown that they do not have power. That's unacceptable.
Thank you so much. We have another caller on the line. Good morning. Hello. Jane, welcome to KBOO.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I'm part Native American and I'm white. So what I wanted to say as well is I've worked in the public school system and many of my students have a white parent who are black.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is that for someone who is East Indian, with the very seriousness of colonialism, and I get that, is that then there's all of these disconnects between problems that we've had in America with environmentalism, such as the Dust Bowl. Cancer Alley is polyvinyl chloride. That's PVC. Bob Marley worked in the auto industry. In that industry, before the EPA, they used to let you just walk around in polyvinyl chloride. It went through your shoes into your brain, and many white people, men, died of brain tumors. So these issues are interconnected for white people. And as a woman who passes Latina, let me say that Portland is not exactly been extremely friendly to me either. My stepsons are pretty past white. Their mom is from the reservation. She is full breed Native American, whatever people would say. I grasp what you guys are saying. I totally get it. But at that same point, I understand the piece about corporations. You know, you look at global corporations and how we're all being decimated by these things. And I'm sorry to out myself. My family fought in the Iraq War, so I pretty much grasp some of these things. But I am just wishing that to put a kind of a perspective that may be a little bit different, and yet at the same time I do grasp what you're saying, because there is a thing, and I think it's like this kind of tenured professor, white people want to be on top, but it's kind of like a cultural thing too. But we had the Dust Bowl in America, and you know, you stop and you look at that alone. People don't realize that, yes, people starved to death. Absolutely, it was a horror story. So, these are topics that affect white people too, and that affected Native Americans. The Dust Bowl is right next to the Rosebud, which is part of my family's from Nebraska. This is all absolutely interrelated, and it should have never happened. We shouldn't be over farming like this. It's a catastrophe. But at the same time, these concepts of white, I think the thing is there's some people who are deeply concerned, and maybe they don't have people who are related. I get that. They're like full pure, 100% white, no, not even a friend that's black or something like that.
But so I think,
excuse me for interrupting,
but I think that there's a point that you may have missed. I don't think anywhere in our conversation today we talked about climate change not impacting the white population. So we know that everybody on the earth, on the planet, is impacted by climate change. That's not the issue. The issue is, how do you build a movement to address climate change and all its factors, right? And the conversation isn't that white people don't have a role. The conversation has been that white people have been leading this effort for well over the last decade, but they're leading it in a way that disconnects from the people most harmed and most impacted by climate change. And mm-hmm. So what we're hearing from established environmental groups is only focused primarily on the science and whether or not a carbon tax is a good thing or a bad thing. But we're not really talking about how are people impacted? How are their day-to-day lives impacted? And so mm-hmm. I think you've missed that what we said is you got to do your work in your own house before you can become part of a coalition. And if you're going to become a part of a coalition that's going to be led by people of color and the people most impacted by climate change, white people have to be able to listen aggressively to what people's lived experiences have been. And then, and only then, can you actually start developing tactics and strategies to have an impact that actually represents a much more global perspective of how you impact climate change. And so I just needed to interrupt you, right? White people have a major role, but again, if we're going to build a movement around this, it has to be led by people most impacted. And all around the globe, the people most impacted are people of color.
And, you know, thank you, Joanne. That's like everything you said is exactly what I was thinking also. And one other thing is that, you know, that's why we want other women of color and other people of color to step up. Because everyone has different perspectives. Mm-hmm. Everyone has different personal experiences. And when you're talking about the Dust Bowl, so the Dust Bowl is a perfect example, right? Mm-hmm. The Dust Bowl was a situation where indigenous people who had been suffering for centuries mm-hmm. and now the white settlers, and even the word settler is a racist white privileged word, right? Like they weren't settlers, they were immigrants and they didn't have any, you know, and they didn't have any permission from the actual native people to be here, right?
That's right.
So they were both suffering, right? But it was only when the white settlers were suffering that the government stepped in to do anything about it.
Yes.
And it was only because the white people were suffering that they actually began to implement strategies that would help with this devastating problem. So that is what we're talking about, is that it's not that white people don't get don't suffer too. Of course they do. Capitalism hurts everyone.
Right.
One of the things that we talk about is we talk about patriarchy. And the first people that patriarchy hurts are the men.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the first people that patriarchy hurts, because patriarchy means you have to do something to yourself in order to ensure that you keep everyone else within your control. You have to first hurt yourself. And so that is the point. That is what we're talking about. That's why white people, that's why, men, that's why people who have privilege, that's why people in this movement and in the general public, you know, need to do this work. And we all need to do this work so that we are not perpetuating those internalized oppressions. And that's why we want different voices to step up. We want different people to form different speak out groups and, you know, to speak from the heart of their own personal experience, because those voices are essential. Those are the voices of the most marginalized.
Absolutely true. And again, this evening, starting at 6:30 p.m., I'm pretty sure the doors will open at 6, at First Unitarian Church, Women of Color Speak Out, Climate Change and Systems of Oppression. And mm-hmm. so I know you have a website and a Facebook page, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what is your website?
So So our website is wocspeakout.com. So that's womenofcolorspeakout.com, wocspeakout.com. And on Facebook, we are also on Facebook as wocspeakout. So you can look for us there. We're all also individually on Facebook, but if you go to the Women of Color Speak Out Facebook, you can find us and contact us there as well. We are also on YouTube. We have various videos up on YouTube of the work that we do. And so if you go on YouTube and look for Women of Color Speak Out, you will find us there as well.
Well, I am so disappointed I will not be able to be in the audience tonight.
I'm so sorry, Joanne.
I'm on a panel at another event tonight. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I would be there front row, absorbing it, taking it all in. Mm-hmm. It has been such a pleasure. I really appreciate you, Zana, taking time to speak with me this morning. I really love the work that you're doing. And I know that we will benefit greatly from having you and your colleagues here this evening. So what's next? So you're here this evening. What's next? What is the next thing that people should be aware of that's coming out of Women of Color Speak Out?
So the next event that we're doing after tonight's event is we will be at the Duwamish Longhouse in Seattle on June 10th from 6 to 9. And we will be there doing our presentation, Climate Change and Systems of Oppression. We have, and then also if they go to our Facebook page and if they go to those places, they can see the different places where we will be coming up to that. There are many different actions planned. There are many different things proposed. I can't talk about specifics because some things haven't been hammered down yet.
Yes.
But as we know, there are many different movements happening within this region, and we are working to partner with many different people, whether it is First Nations, whether it is white mainstream people in the movement. You know, what you're seeing in the last year within Seattle and within this area is that there has been a slight shift in the perspective of, well, wait a minute, we need to be really focusing on the fact that 2 degrees is not a good thing. And we need to be focusing on the fact that we need 1.5 degrees. And we need to be focusing on the fact that we need more voices of color. And, you know, there's been that shift, and there's been that shift partly because of the work that we've been doing. Mm-hmm. So there will be much more of that. And we don't shy away from the difficult questions. So we will be working on that. And so if people are able to come to the Duwamish Longhouse, they will get to meet Youth of Color Speak Out, where we will be launching them. And that is going to be extremely exciting because these are teenagers who are really excited and they're youth of color and they want to take steps to defend their people and to defend this planet. And they are really inspiring the rest of us, because if only at that age we had all been like that.
Yes. Right? Yeah. I was thinking the exact same thing while you were talking. I was thinking, mm-hmm. you know, our youth, they get so many of the injustices that mm-hmm. exist in our society. And mm-hmm. if given an opportunity, they will step up every time.
Exactly. And that's the thing about our society, is that that's exactly what the system does not want.
Yes.
The system doesn't want the young people to be empowered. Right. That's why they have created a college system that where it's impossible to go to college without being, you know, massively in debt. Well, if you're yes. in debt, you have to work and work and work to pay off that debt.
That's
you
right.
don't have time to spend fighting injustice. You don't have time to actually spend helping each other. So the system wants us isolated and afraid, excuse me, and in debt. And so that's why we're working on this, because we need to decolonize this entire process and ensure that the youth and the children, who in fact are the ones who are really going to be facing the worst causes, this is their life, this is their generation, it's their children. And so when we listen to them, we are listening to the voices of those who are most marginalized. And it's really important for us to all step up and support them in everything that they're doing.
Absolutely so. And I want to thank you. I am grateful. I am appreciative. I am so thankful that I had the opportunity to talk to you this morning, Zana Joshi. And she will be here at the First Unitarian Church. Doors open at 6 p.m. this evening. The program starts at 6:30. Women of Color Speak Out, Climate Change, and Systems of Oppression. Thank you so much. Have a fabulous day. And we'll see you here at Voices from the Edge next week, same time, same place, same station. Thank you greatly, Steve. As always, you've been fabulous.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's not all that glitter is gold.
Hey, good morning. It is KBOO, KBOO Portland. A minute before 9 o'clock, and in 1 hour, join us for Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary on the Boo. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, former CIA officer Ray McGovern discusses Hillary Clinton's lies about security breaches and her private email server. Also, our weekly election protection bulletin with Greg Pallast. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Bethany Grabo speaks with Jesse Andrews, author of the new novel The Haters. And then at 11:30 on The Film Show, Jen Chavez speaks with local experimental filmmaker Vanessa Rennick. Also on the show, Portland Horror Film Festival organizer Gwen Callahan, Daylight's End producer Sherry Dieterling, and director Will Kaufman, and Josh Leake. That's all coming up this morning after 1 hour of Press Watch. It's news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell right after this.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And this KBOO program is also made possible in part by Seattle Theater Group, presenting An Astrophysicist Goes to the Movies. Two evenings with Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, September 19th and 20th at the Keller Auditorium. Tickets for Neil deGrasse Tyson this September are on sale now, and more information is available at portland5.com.